Good afternoon. So this actually, it's great to follow Pat, who's a really kind of legend on GMO research and technologies. And that's what I'm going to focus my remarks on today. As we know, GE seeds and crops and foods containing GMOs is a really high-profile subject in the media today, on the internet and blogs. You're probably all aware of a recent article in The New Yorker and stirred up a lot of discussion, and I'll touch on some of those aspects of the article later. But it's a subject that requires full examination and really robust policy and action, because its implications of this technology are very deep and very broad. The claims are huge. The biotech industry claims that this technology is a key solution to most of today's major crises, to hunger and malnutrition, climate change, water shortages, and more. And advocates assert that people in this, like us in this room, who have any critique about GE seeds and crops are just uninformed or naive, perhaps dubious mental capacities, and we're causing people to go hungry and children to go blind. But as Pat just said, and I say again, it is the failure of this technology to deliver on its promises, not Luddite fear-mongering, that has prompted scientists, academicians, policymakers, and regular people who eat and who care about this planet to question GE agriculture and this approach. Reasonable inquiry would examine the state of the planet today and ask this question: has the industrial system made the world a better place? GE agriculture is deeply embedded in this overarching myth of industrial societies, that we cling to the belief that new technological innovation is the result of great creativity, great smarts and brain power, and expanded and advanced views of the world. But as many have repeated today, and all these technologies we're discussing, many technologies, particularly GE seeds and crops, are actually a backward way of looking at things and a result of a very narrow reductionist thinking and fundamentally a failure of imagination. GE crops are simply a continuation of the status quo, an industrial approach to agriculture that's been underway for half a century. It's failed to address hunger and malnutrition. It's caused intensive harm to ecosystems and further diminishes biodiversity, and even continues and enhances a system that has resulted in diminishing farmer livelihoods and harming our rural communities. And so to remind us what's at stake, because I think it's good to know where we are, let's quickly review the state of agriculture and food systems today. Around 870 million, one in eight people on the planet, suffered chronic undernourishment and food insecurity in the period of 2010-2012. Not much has changed since then. In this same period, hunger in Africa increased by almost 20 million more people. Poor nutrition causes nearly half the deaths of children under five. That's 3.1 million children each year. And in India, despite this impressive economic growth, and they embraced much more industrial agriculture systems, yet the number of hungry people has risen by 65 million. It's widely acknowledged also that the industrial agriculture system is causing major environmental harms. These are well documented. I won't go into much detail, but we know it's associated with dead zones in our ocean, polluted waterways. This is from nitrogen fertilizers and other chemicals. We have depleted soils, we have loss of wildlife and habitat, and much more. And as regions in the world are continuing to shortages of water, it's becoming quite serious in many regions. Industrial agriculture continues to suck up 70% of the planet's fresh water. And further, climate change and industrial agriculture, which GE crops is a part of, are deeply intertwined. Wes referred to this as well. But the World Bank reports that current industrial agriculture is responsible for 30% of global greenhouse gas emissions. And here's a stunning statistic. 60% of global nitrous oxide emissions, which is nearly around 300 times more potent than carbon dioxide, is due to the use of nitrogen, synthetic nitrogen fertilizer in industrial agriculture. So clearly, we need a new imagination, new visionary thinking is needed. But instead, the biotech industry offers us business as usual and more of the same. The industry promotes that GE crops are a 21st century agriculture approach. But I think sober minds would rationally question the logic of continuing a chemical-centric, water-guzzling system of agriculture, especially in times of climate change. This increases food insecurity and natural resource depletion. So that's what we're here to do today. And there are several myths that can be debunked about GE agriculture. I'll only address two major myths today because they seem very prominent in much of the media stories recently. If you want to know more, there's a table out there that has some literature about much more debunking the myths of GE agriculture. The first thing I want to talk about is that GE crops, the myth that GE crops offer nutritionally enhanced foods that will alleviate suffering in poor countries and help provide food security. And the second issue will be that GE crops are environmentally sound and climate friendly. Jerry reminded us of the power of marketing and advertising. And like today, Daisy called technologies, GE agriculture shares this common bond of creating a success when that it's a fiction. The fictional narrative about traits that GE crops contain has been created by consistent, continuous, and costly marketing that has successfully convinced, I'd say most now, of our opinion leaders in the US, government officials, and media, including many of the left-leaning or liberal media outlets, that GE crops have all sorts of traits that they simply do not have. And just to give a few figures on how much is spent to create this narrative, biotech companies spend hundreds of millions in advertising and marketing each year. Monsanto alone spent around $120 million in advertising, and it primarily focuses on GE crops. The industry spends millions more on lobbying, opposing the ballot initiatives to label GMOs in foods, and other promotional activities. It's a little ironic, perhaps, that biotech industry insists that it's a science-based solution, yet it's created its perception of success shaped by spending millions of dollars on marketing, creating marketing illusions. So GE crops advocate claims that they have many kinds of genetic traits. But in contrast to the marketing hype, the reality is that after spending hundreds of millions of dollars and at least 30 years of research, only two traits dominate GE crops. And over 99% of the crops are either, first of all, herbicide resistant, which are engineered to withstand repeated broad spectrum dousing of one or more herbicides. The primary one would be glyphosate, to kill weeds, but not the crop. The second kind of GE crop is insect resistance, often known as BT crops. They produce toxins in their tissues to kill target pests. So how about this GE crop that solves malnutrition and hunger? The return of the golden rice is a classic example of a product that is marketed as a fait accompli, even though field trials for at least two decades have failed to deliver on these promises. Golden rice, which is engineered to have high levels of carotenoids, which is a precursor of vitamin A, has been promoted as a solution to prevent blindness for millions of children in the developing world who are deficient in vitamin A. A recent New Yorker article claimed that activists prevented golden rice from being commercialized and has therefore caused blindness of millions of children in the developing world. But the article and the assessment is completely misinformed because golden rice is not on the market because it has failed to deliver. As recently as March 2014, the research institute charged with testing the golden rice and doing the field tests released a report that said, quote, the average yield of GE golden rice was unfortunately lower than that from comparable local varieties already preferred by farmers. The report also stated, it has not yet been determined whether daily consumption of golden rice does improve the vitamin A status of the vitamin of those deficient in vitamin A. And prior to the field tests, it's important to note that for at least a decade, the development of golden rice was hung up because of a host of conflicts among biotech companies who were arguing about who owned what intellectual property rights. And this in itself is probably an indictment of a system based on ownership of seeds, but that's a whole other talk and panel, perhaps. So unfortunately, golden rice is not an anomaly. In early 2000, African plant pathologist Florence Wambugu directed a project for Monsanto to develop a virus-resistant GE sweet potato to be grown in Kenya. The New Scientist magazine reported on the project, quote, "In Africa, GE food could almost literally weed out poverty." Forbes magazine reported, quote, "While the West debates the ethics of genetically modified food, Florence Wambugu is using it to feed her country." However, these articles and these banner headlines were published a few years before field trials were even completed. And so while the media headlines and opinion leaders around the world and extolled the virtues of the GE sweet potato as if it already existed, the results of the failed field trials were quietly published a few years later. Kenya's Daily Nation reported, "Trials to develop a virus-resistant sweet potato through biotechnology have failed." But the banner headlines of the perception that it existed and was successful has remained. Similarly, we had the same thing with cassava. This cassava is one of the most important starch crops in Africa, and there was a report that it was enriched with greatly increased protein content using genetic engineering. However, the research article claiming the elevated protein was later retracted when it was found that the purported increased protein did not exist. The retraction said the investigation reveals, quote, "significant amounts of data and supporting documentation that were claimed to be produced by the first author could not be found. And further, the validity of the results could not be verified." So these are just a few examples of repeating patterns of the biotechnology industry in which they create this story of a success. And sometimes this happens before a crop has even been tested at all. Yet the majority of media does not cover the failures. And equally disturbing to many is that the story of real successes of these of low-cost technologies do not get reported and then do not receive adequate funding. Around the same time, Monsanto was making claims about the GE virus-resistant sweet potato, breeders in Uganda and Mozambique were successfully developing disease-resistant sweet potatoes with high beta-carotene content and also had high productivity, higher than the conventional crops. Same thing for cassava and many other crops. There are all kinds of ecological systems around the world, push-pull systems that have been great successes in helping farmers eliminate pests and diseases and have higher yields while also using less chemicals, fertilizers, and water. Yet these don't get the banner headlines. Moving on to, and then also a word I think we're all aware about the food security issue. Most GE crops grown today are grown for biofuels, for cars, and they're feeding livestock. So the whole marketing scheme of we're feeding the world has just not been borne out by the crops today and the purpose of them. So on to the second, GE crops are environmentally sound. Examining the GE crop herbicide usage illustrates some of the environmental hazards. As about 85% of GE crops in the world are herbicide resistant. Nearly all of them are Monsanto's Roundup Ready corn, soybeans, cotton, alfalfa, canola, and sugar beets. And as I mentioned, the most active ingredient is glyphosate. Claims that GE crops reduce chemical usage have just simply not been borne out by the scientific data. The U.S. Department of Agriculture itself has shown that around 527 million more pounds of herbicides were sprayed in the U.S. than would likely have been the case without these crops. The bioindustry claims that glyphosate has replaced some highly toxic herbicides such as atrazine, but atrazine continues to be sprayed on at least 60% of the U.S. corn acres, even as glyphosate at the same time usage has soared. So what has this resulted in, and where are we going from this? The enormous use of glyphosate, now roughly 200 pounds per year on just U.S. corn and soybeans alone, has also generated an epidemic of glyphosate-resistant weeds, also sometimes referred to as superweeds. Virtually unknown, these weeds were unknown prior to Roundup Ready crops. These weeds now infest over 60 million acres of cropland in the U.S. Leading weed scientists are warning farmers, are warned that farmers are running out of options, and to control what is rapidly becoming an unmanageable problem. This is Science Daily. This is a scientific-based magazine. Texas, in June 2014, requested that from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to permit emergency use of the highly toxic herbicide propazine to kill superweeds infesting 3 million acres of Texas cotton, which is about one quarter of U.S. production. It's a serious problem. But what is the response to superweeds epidemic? The biotech industry says it's stronger, more toxic chemicals. Unfortunately, we recently learned that the EPA just approved Dow AgroScience's GE corn and soybeans resistant to 2,4-D. Even though the USDA projects that the GE corn and soybeans will increase use of 2,4-D from 26 million pounds per year to 176 million pounds per year. In addition to health concerns raised by these next generation GE crops, USDA and weed scientists, they agree that weed resistance to 2,4-D will likely occur rather quickly. And 2,4-D, as you probably know, presents health concerns linked to increased rates of immune system cancer, Parkinson's disease, and other health problems. Monsanto, also coming down the pike, is planning to seek approval for transgenic dicamba-resistant soybeans, corn, and cotton. And dicamba has been linked to increased rates of colon and lung failures, lung cancer in farmers by the National Cancer Institute. But the thing is, so we need a forward vision for food security and preserving ecosystems. And there are alternatives to chemically driven, water-intensive agriculture systems. There are many examples. Extensive research shows that a variety of agroecological systems and other methods outperform GE and conventional crops in generating higher yields while reducing chemicals and water usage. One of the most thorough and comprehensive studies was done by the University of Essex, and it shows that ecological methods on 286 farms across 57 developing countries involving 12 million small-scale growers have increased the average crop yield by 79%. And all crops had water use efficiency gains and carbon sequestration and reduced pesticide use. But still costly, often unproven, and as we learned today, failed GE crops that require massive capital investment are given the lion's share of resources instead of providing funds for low-cost and knowledge-based technologies that have demonstrated great success. We know we need serious solutions for better ensuring food security and maintaining natural resources. I'm going to close with a hero of mine who's already been quoted. I'm sure he's a hero of many of yours, Wendell Berry, to just remind us, as he said, agriculture must mediate between nature and the human communities with ties and obligations in both directions. So I think what we're here today advocating is that in the case, for example, of GE crops and seeds, this is a technology that is failed, that is creating a false narrative of success. And we do have knowledge-based, ancient technologies that we can draw upon to better protect and enhance our ecosystems here and to feed the planet and address these serious issues of climate change as well. Thank you.